Welcome to the Independent RX Forum with Pharmacy Times and the National Community Pharmacists Association, the leading advocate and business education resource for America's independent pharmacists.
Hi, my name is Ann Cassidy. I'm Vice President of State and Federal Government Affairs for the National Community Pharmacist Association. And joining me, I have Matt Seiler, who is General Counsel for NCPA. Matt, you want to give a little bit of your background?
Yeah, sure. Hello, everyone. Matt Seiler. As Ann said, I'm the General Counsel here. I'm in probably my 20th year of practice post law school. I've been in-house for about 17 of those years. I've worked in the financial services sector. I've worked for the Nurses Association and the Physical Therapists Association, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, great. I mean, you have obviously a lot of experience in healthcare, and you know, something interesting that's come up in healthcare, and we don't think about it as much, is but with the Federal Trade Commission or the FTC, you know, there's been a lot of activity, and I know pharmacists, our members, have heard a lot about the FTC. So let's start out really high level, because probably most folks don't know what their purpose is, what they do, you know, who they regulate. So can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what their purpose is, who do they have jurisdiction over, and how are they different than the Department of Justice or the DOJ?
Yeah, sure. So the FTC is the agency that is essentially tasked with enforcing federal competition and consumer protection laws. They set out to, you know, prevent anti-competitive and deceptive and unfair business practices. And they share that responsibility with the DOJ. On the anti-competition perspective, you know, that shared responsibility has some overlap. But the major difference is that the FTC can only pursue civil matters or non-criminal matters. And the FTC also cannot review matters related to like insurance and generally matters related to nonprofit entities. On the opposite side of the coin, the DOJ can bring criminal matters related to anti-competitive activities. And then the two agencies kind of share responsibilities as to, you know, what entity gets or agency gets designated, if you will. So the DOJ has been designated as sort of like the transportation, most agriculture, communications in partnership with the FCC. And then after that, it kind of gets really tricky in how it divides up between the two agencies. And it really goes down into like what agency over the years has developed expertise in a particular industry. But I won't get into all of that.
No, I mean, I think that's really helpful, because I think, you know, we don't hear about, again, as much, at least even in the pharmacy space. And that's probably because the FTC has not acted or has been as active as we would have liked them to be. But real, you know, as you were talking, something just occurred to me. Do you see sort of in the future a little bit their positions or you know, their jurisdiction being a little convoluted now with all this? And we're going to talk a little bit more about consolidation, vertical integration. But, you know, going forward, you know, how are we going to define these entities? Are they insurers? Are they PBMs?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, because the FTC cannot regulate insurers or insurance. I don't know if it's insurers or insurance. I can't recall off the top of my head. But, you know, it's going to be a difficult thing, and it's going to require the two agencies to work together. I think right now the leadership of both agencies are very much in lockstep around at least the pharmaceutical industry and some of the vertically consolidated entities. I think they're in lockstep about the fact that they need to be regulated. They need to be looked at least more so than what they have in the past.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting question going forward. I mean, you know, we're not going to get into all this, but there could be, I could see potential litigation and just defining and, you know, even going down to states and who has regulatory authority on, you know, what an insurer is. So anyway, we'll save that for another day.
Yeah.
You know, getting back to the FTC, You know, over the last 15 years, we've seen significant consolidation or integration in the PBM space. First, it was PBMs and pharmacies merging, then big PBMs merging. It was ESI and Medco, and then most recently, insurers and PBMs. Does the FTC bear any responsibility for the current anti-competitive environment? And, you know, if so, what actions or inactions by the FTC has contributed to this environment?
Yeah, again, two very good questions, complex. You know, I don't think you can point to the FTC solely as a place to lay blame, as I think there's a lot of blame to go around, frankly.
Yeah.
In many ways, you know, the FTC has reacted to the policy shift that took place in the late 1970s on how we enforce our competition laws. But I get the sense that the current leadership of the FTC is trying to rein that in a little bit. I don't think they're trying to overcorrect too much, but I think there's a recognition that maybe the pendulum has swung too far. So in terms of like what actions or inactions have contributed to this, you know, there are a lot of inactions, frankly. and, you know, some actions where, you know, they basically, you know, cleared the CVS Caremark acquisition, for example, and, you know, how that ultimately then prompted United Health Group and Cigna to bolster their PBM arms. It was kind of like a license to go out and acquire, you know, PBMs. And so, yeah, I guess it is actions and inactions really that has led to this, but I don't really think you can lay the blame solely on the FTC.
No, I mean, I think that's, yeah, I think that's fair. I know there, you know, there was that listening session, the DOJ FTC listening session. It was just really interesting though, to hear it's not just in the pharmacy world where all this consolidation has caused so many problems for patients, for providers. You see with the hospitals, you see it with the physician group. So, you know, I do think it's important that the FTC, you know, take some steps forward. And so that kind of leads me to another question that I have for you. You know, so the FTC, they, you know, they probably should take some responsibility for the current environment. But the good news is that I think they have the ability to make reforms and provide some relief, you know, right the ship, if you will. Yeah. So now that the FTC is reevaluating the PBM industry, and we're so appreciative of the fact that they're doing that, what are, I don't know, three main things that you think the FTC is most interested in looking into when it comes to PBMs?
Yeah, in my discussions with the FTC, I get the sense they're very concerned about patient steering, you know, the take it or leave it contracts or the adhesion contracts, if you will, and then discriminatory reimbursement and how all of those things have led to consumer harm. And they've led to consumer harm not only on consumer price. You think about how, you know, patient steering has led to, you know, patients having to go to different pharmacies and having to, and if they don't, they have to pay a higher price at their independent pharmacy because they're out of network. On the adhesion contract side of things, how that's led to, you know, these crazy clawbacks that happen after the point of sale and how the consumer is really left holding the bag with the higher copay or coinsurance and how that's never been resolved. And things like that. And then the discriminatory reimbursement, I think, also ultimately leads to consumer harm because then with that, pharmacies close. And so they don't have access and they're forced to go into these mail order pharmacies where, I mean, you heard it that day on that call. And we've seen it in comments how consumers are absolutely harmed by that. If you're on a medication that's sensitive to temperatures, if you're on a medication that needs, you know, close monitoring, you can't get that through the mail. It's a lot harder. So I would say, you know, those are the three areas that I get the sense they're most interested in because of the consumer harm that's that results from that you know, anti-competitive activity of the PBMs.
Yeah, I mean, and absolutely. I think at the end of the day, the patient or the consumer should always be what, you know, place at the top and what we're thinking about in terms of how certain practices, how certain PBM practices impact them. And even when we're talking about, under reimbursement, like you said, for pharmacies, low reimbursement clawbacks that potentially could put pharmacies out of business, then patient access is threatened. Mm-hmm. Of course, we don't want it to come to that. We don't want Congress or the FTC or state legislatures to wait to act until there aren't pharmacies and there are access problems. So I do think it's very important that the FTC is proactive. Mm-hmm. And sort of speaking, along those same lines, if the FTC was inclined to help, and I think, just looking at especially the last year, mm-hmm. I think they are, what could the FTC do to help pharmacies? Can you talk about certain tools that the FTC may have to combat anti-competitive PBM practices?
Sure. They could start by undertaking a 6B study like the one that they proposed in February, or a version of it that would, also take into account the concerns that the Republican commissioners raised, mm-hmm. that I think were valid. That could be a good starting point. And then they could use the information gleaned from that study to undertake rulemaking, to require things like parity and contracting, to address specialty drug limitations, to address patient steering and punitive audit practices, and then ultimately to address the discriminatory reimbursement that we're seeing.
Well, I get asked this a lot, I'm sure you do, and mm-hmm. Let's just be candid. With these mergers, is there any chance that they would overturn, or I'm probably not using the right term, but
unwind,
yes. Thank you. Unwind these mergers. Is that something that is just in the realm of possibility, or would they provide other relief?
I doubt it, but here's the thing. I've read, and I don't remember where exactly, but I read that the PBMs and the insurers, so like the Aetnas and the Cignas of the world, they haven't really fully come to recognize all of the efficiencies that are supposedly to be gained by them vertically integrating. And at the same time, I think what we've seen is they've realized a lot of financial benefits from that vertical integration. So could they do it? I think because there hasn't been a lot of efficiencies gained, yes, I think the answer is they could do it and it wouldn't disrupt the market. Would they do it? Probably not, just given all of the financial implications involved in it and how much pressure the PBMs would put on Congress and the administration for them not to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think in theory, it could still be done. Like, they're not too far along to say that it's just too big to unwind.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's always a very popular question. And so I really appreciate you answering that. So you brought up something called a FTC 6B study. And there was a vote on that, on a 6B study in February, so about a month and a half ago. And unfortunately, it failed. It was a 2-2 vote. Can you tell us, number one, what is a 6B study, in case folks don't know? And then sort of what types of things would they look for in a 6B study? What can they use it? What can they use what they find? How will they use it? And then we can get on to the sort of the next round of questions is, do you anticipate an FTC initiating another 6B study vote? So kind of tell us what a 6B study is and what it's used for and what they could use for it specifically when it comes to looking into PBM practices.
Okay. All very, very simple questions. Thanks for asking.
we forget. We're throwing around like 6B study.
No, I'm just being funny. So a 6B study, I think for people listening, the easiest way to understand it is it's like an investigative inquiry into a business or a group of businesses. Think of it like as a subpoena. Mm-hmm. They'll basically write a document. They'll send that document to the business, and the business will either respond. They could challenge it in court, actually, to maybe try to narrow the scope of it, And the types of things that they could look for, you know, are all the things that we've discussed, how their businesses have negatively impacted consumers. So, you know, the PBMs always say they do what they do for consumers. But my question is why aren't they more transparent though? And so this study, I think, will provide transparency, at least to the regulators, on many of the things we know negatively impact, you know, our members' patients. So, you know, those are the types of things that they can look for. Everything that we've talked about, from, you know, negative reimbursement to the adhesion contracts. I would say if they took one thing to look at, it would start with just how ridiculous the adhesion contracts are. Those take it or leave it contracts as a good starting point. I mean, when you compare those contracts with what I would call a quote unquote normal contract, it would become clear that the PBMs provide those contracts to independent pharmacies because they control market access. And that's why they control or can offer such ridiculous terms, is because they control access to the market. So the independent pharmacies have nowhere else to go. And I think if the PBM or if the FTC really dives into those PBM contracts, they'll see how sort of ridiculous they are. And then I think you had one other question about whether they'll initiate another try at the 6B study.
And I know you can't predict the future, but, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I do think they will do another vote on a 6B study. I believe the Republican commissioners made it very clear what they wanted to see added to the study. So I take that as there being bipartisan support for one on the commission. So now it's just a matter of writing it in a way to get all of the commissioners on the same page. And I think they will do that. There's enough support, bipartisan support on the commission. And, you know, from what we know of all of the members of Congress that, you know, urged the FTC to take a different direction than what they did in February, I'm pretty sure we'll see one.
Yeah. And I've noticed that FTC Chairwoman Khan, she's been actually very vocal. Mm-hmm. About, you know, she was very disappointed that the other vote failed. And I think she came out almost immediately on social media and said that, you know, they're going to try again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of looking at the cycle that led up to the last 6B study, it looks like we're in the same cycle. So like last fall, there was a request for comments. I know NCPA and then thousands and thousands of pharmacies submitted comments. And then there was a comment period right before in February, right before the vote failed. And then 2 days later, there was a new request for comments that's going on right now. And if you're listening to this, you can submit comments. The deadline is May 25th. Sorry, I just had to plug that.
No, that's good. You're right.
And we've already had a great turnout. And I've seen tons of patient advocacy groups also urging patients to submit comments. So that's really good, but it kind of looks like it's following the same cycle. So, you know, fingers crossed that it's going to lead up to another vote for a 6B study. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you a question real quick, another question about a 6B study. Something that I get asked a lot with advocacy from state legislators and even, you know, members of Congress, they are always wanting to know more information about commercial plans. And unfortunately, that is a pretty tight black box because it's all proprietary and confidential. Yep. So we struggle to get information. Will the FTC have access to that kind of information?
They will, but it won't be public. The FTC will, I believe, write a report based on the study, maybe make recommendations to Congress. But the actual information itself is not public. That's provided by the recipient of a 6B order to the FTC.
Okay, well, but at least the FTC will know what we assume we know, but they'll know for sure. Yeah. Just, you know, a couple other questions. Mm-hmm. I know when we talk about advocacy here at NCPA, I think the thing that usually comes first to mind is Congress, state legislatures, or even regulatory agencies like CMS. But I know NCPA and you in particular have been doing a lot of work with the FTC. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about NCPA's interaction with the FTC and activities NCPA has been engaged in? I know we have for the last 15 years, but you know, you specifically in the last year or so, I know there's been a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm actually coming up on my 1 year mark here at NCPA.
Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah. So sure. We've met with the FTC on multiple occasions, both staff from the healthcare division and leadership staff. And we've put members in front of the FTC actually on Zoom calls to tell their stories. And we've written letters and provided comments, formal comments, just like what our members have done. And so, you know, our connection with the FTC over the last year has really run the gamut. But it didn't stop at the FTC. You know, we also met with the DOJ on the United Health Group's proposed acquisition of Change. And we explained to them.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a big issue because, mm-hmm. you know, I think the DOJ recognized the implications for pharmacy, but they had to use prosecutorial discretion in, you know, filing their complaint. And they focused only on the medical side of things. And so what's interesting is everything that I'm reading now in the press from United Health Group about how they're going to divest certain aspects of Change to make this, you know, kumbaya or symbiotic relationship work without, you know, creating an anti-competitive world. They're only talking about the medical side of things. They're not talking about like the switch that also has a ton of data on the pharmacy side of things that they should get rid of that, you know, Change possesses. So I think, you know, we've made our point to the DOJ. You know, they had to choose a path. I understand why they chose the path. But they do understand that there's a risk there on the pharmacy side of things too. So it's always good to have those conversations with the DOJ in addition to the FTC. And you know, we've been, you know, asking them to work together on a lot of these things because of the vertical integration and the limitations placed on the FTC's jurisdiction.
You know, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's really important that we continue to engage both the FTC and the DOJ. You know, we've been talking a lot about the FTC today because there's a lot specifically in the PBM space, pharmacy space going on. But again, I'm glad you brought up DOJ and Change, and I'm sure there'll be other issues before DOJ. But anyway, just sort of in closing, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to walk through all these issues that are going on with the FTC. I know that we talk a lot about the FTC and our communications and what's going on and social media, but just, you know, sometimes I'll get calls from members saying, you know, explain this to me, you know, mm-hmm. and so I think this is, you know, really helpful, and, you know, I appreciate you walking me through it.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I think right now, with the leadership at the FTC and Lena Khan, is probably one of our best shots in years for something to get done on PBMs. And, you know, I'm hopeful too that the nominee Alvaro Bedoya gets confirmed because he understands independent pharmacy. He has family that's in independent pharmacy, you know, like distant by marriage family, but because of that, he gets it. He's taken an interest in it. And so having another advocate, you know, on the commission for independent pharmacy, I think is really important. And I'm hopeful that he'll get confirmed soon. So, you know, if there's a time, I think the time's now.
I cannot agree more. And there's also a lot of eyes, you know, congressional eyes on the FTC as well. We've had a lot of engagement. There was a lot of disappointed members of Congress when that last FTC 6B study failed. So that was great to see a lot of outreach from Congress to the FTC, you know, urging them to act. And so hopefully pressure will be continued to be applied by Congress, by advocacy groups. But, you know, like you said, to your point, I'm not sure that we have to apply too much pressure. I think the leadership at the FTC is ready and willing to move forward, and they realize the importance of taking a deep dive into the PBM industry, into PBM practices, because they have operated in a black box for so very long. And, you know, we're just appreciative that the FTC is opening their eyes to this. But anyway, Matt, thank you so much for joining me. I think this was really interesting, and thanks again.
Sure. Thank you.